Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Dial 678-ESOG now for a solution to your foundation and waterproofing problems.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
One of the phrases you hear me use a lot is the notion of online chatter. The internet just has a way of knowing things. And, you know, depending on how the online chatter is kind of going, how the wind is blowing, that makes certain days feel different than they otherwise would. Today is a day in which five-star cornerback Tony Grimes is slated to make his commitment announcement. He's got a list of finalists. In fact, on video, we'll show those to you, who he's choosing from: Georgia, Texas A&M, Ohio State, North Carolina. The thought, though, here is that it's really Georgia versus North Carolina for Grimes. Now, to go back to the idea of the online chatter for a moment, if the internet was leaning in the direction of Georgia on this, this whole day would be, you know, very, very different. You know, it'd be just the feeling here on the Dog Nation video channel, so the podcast or whatever else, there'd just be a completely different vibe. But many of you who follow this stuff closely know that the online chatter in this particular case seems to have Grimes maybe gravitating towards North Carolina. This is true for a couple of reasons. First of all, Mack Brown, the return to North Carolina for him, he was head coach there years ago, back now in Chapel Hill. He's done a good job in recruiting. They have really kind of, you know, made some headway there. And Georgia, which has used the state of North Carolina for success in recruiting, think about Zamir White, think about Jordan Davis. You know, the idea of more head-to-head battles in the future between the Dogs and the Tar Heels, that could be a thing in the future, because for now, North Carolina is a little bit of a player on the scene when it comes to recruiting. This doesn't feel like a flash-in-the-pan type fad. They may hang around here for a little while. The other thing is, as has been well-documented, Dre Bly was a great defensive back for the Tar Heels, now back at North Carolina's defensive backs coach. He is from that kind of Hampton Roads area in Virginia that Tony Grimes also calls home. There is a strong bond seemingly between those two. The one thing that you hear over and over again is that Georgia is a major player in all of this, but North Carolina seemingly has a lot going for it. And so the announcement that could be made today, there is a strong chance. And listen, if I were to make all my predictions on all this stuff, I'd be getting just as many right as wrong. So, you know, this doesn't count as an official prediction necessarily, but my hunch is, my suspicion is that Grimes is going to announce North Carolina when he chooses later on this evening. And all of this, and the reasons that I just mentioned why, kind of reminds me of something that Kirby Smart said on National Signing Day going way back years ago, when the 2017 class, Smart's first real big Grand Slam class at Georgia, finished number 3 in the 24/7 Sports Composite team ranking. When that class first came together, and the idea of how you stay on these guys, you keep recruiting them hard, what Smart said way back then, probably relevant for what may happen with Tony Grimes, starting with the day after today, tomorrow. Here is Kirby Smart from years ago.
It's never over in recruiting. So, I mean, we're constantly recruiting, looking for more guys, trying to find things. And that's kind of a ongoing process all the time.
So never over in recruiting, Kirby Smart says. That's probably always true. But there are certain days in which the truth of that gives you a little bit more comfort, makes you feel a little bit better about the situation. This is an example of that. It's a good thing that things are never over in recruiting. It's a good thing that the door remains open, because let's face it, if the opposite was true, then Georgia's probably looking at Tony Grimes playing elsewhere, just based on what the internet seems to think that Grimes is going to do tonight, what the online chatter suggests that he does. Now, that doesn't mean that Georgia will eventually win the Grimes recruitment. It's no easier to win it moving forward than it is to earn the commitment here tonight. But this is the one thing that that Smart and his staff are seemingly good at doing. We've played you a lot of audio of Smart talking over the course of the coronavirus lockdown about how cognizant and aware he is of the I call it kind of commission breath. That salesman who's kind of always asking you for a referral, always asking you for, you know, something. It's like you can't be in that person's presence without them trying to sell you something. You know, Kirby Smart, I think, is aware of that from a coaching standpoint of, for coaches who are a little bit, you know, stir crazy or kind of, you know, cabin fever, is that what that's called, when you're kind of locked in your house too long? You know, he's aware that some coaches end up getting a little too pushy in the recruiting trail. Smart's been, has in his own words, said, I want to be careful that I don't do that. I want to be careful that we're not badgering these kids to death because we've got nothing else to do. And that when we do talk to kids, especially going back when he first said this weeks and weeks, months and months ago, we do talk to these kids, Let's make sure we're connecting with them on a personal level, asking about the health of their family, asking about the jobs of their parents, asking them about things like that, and not just constantly worried about, you know, how things are going to play out from a football standpoint. You may remember that Deion Glover, Tony Grimes' dad, even said, and we don't know that this was Kirby Smart, but it was kind of a quote that sounds like it could have been Kirby Smart. He says, when a head coach tells you that no matter what program your son chooses, you and I are going to be friends for the rest of my life, he says, you got to rethink things a little bit. Now, we don't know that was Smart, but just based on the way that Smart has described his own recruitment tactics and processes over the years, it's easy to imagine that being the case. Because Smart does establish authentic relationships, because he is good at doing that, that if a guy like Grimes were to announce somebody else today, there is a thought amongst Georgia fans that, hey, you know, there may still be a candle in the window for Grimes before it's all said and done. In fact, if you go and read Jeff Sintel at DogNation.com, who wrote about this at both the forum at forum.dognation.com and on DogNation.com, the one idea that Jeff's put out there is there will still be visits to take place, that Grimes may, you know, call UNC his committed school here today, but there will still be some official visits that go down. And I think all of us realize that once the moratorium on these kinds of visits is lifted, once guys can be back on campuses again, the Georgia campus sells itself very, very well in comparison to almost anything else, even a pristine campus like the one there on Chapel Hill. But then on this same subject, there is this. A certain reality I think that Georgia's going to have to face moving forward is that because of the depth that Georgia's put together on its roster and because of the kinds of teams that it competes against in the SEC, recruiting battles to a degree are going to be more difficult to win. There's a certain, I guess you'd call it like market efficiency in recruiting where, you know, players like to gravitate together towards a certain program, or in the SEC's case, they like to all kind of congregate within the same league. But at a certain point, that depth, that logjam of talent, it's not going to be for everyone. And a lot of us, you know, kind of assume this about Grimes when he was initially considering reclassifying himself as a 2020 commit of, well, my gosh, look at all the defensive backs that Georgia has on the field for 2020. This is one of the deepest secondaries, maybe the deepest secondary in the entire country. If Grimes were to have reclassified as a 2020 recruit, which he briefly considered doing, it's hard to imagine him feeling like he'd have a great spot there, just because it's already hard for Georgia to play all of the defensive backs it already has before you add an elite talent like Grimes potentially in the mix there. And it's going to be, you know, a little less true in 2021, but still, this is a very deep and talented roster. Lots of really good players may not get as much playing time as they want. When programs like North Carolina, and at least for now, for the foreseeable future, North Carolina has more open spots, more available playing time, it's just potentially a little easier path towards stardom. The one thing I think that Georgia's going to have to kind of deal with and figure out how it's going to battle against is the idea that the openness of a depth chart and the ease of competition in some conferences compared to the SEC will be a selling point for many schools. Go back to what Kirby Smart said when he was on the Paul Feinbaum show a couple of months ago, or at least a few weeks ago. A lot of us took this to be kind of a subtweet of Dabo Swinney and Clemson, but I think what Smart said about the nature of playing in the SEC, battling for playing time on a deep roster like Georgia, in comparison to what some of the neighboring states and what some of the neighboring schools, what some of the neighboring conferences can offer, Kirby Smart knows that he's battling against various programs that will negative recruit about the overall toughness required to thrive in a place like Athens and in a conference like the SEC. Here is Smart from the Feinbaum Show.
Oh, absolutely. It's a great sales piece. What gets me, Paul, is you probably would believe it, but you wouldn't believe what some coaches outside our conference tell kids. You know, they'll sell to a kid, it's better to not go to the SEC because it's too tough, it's too competitive, it's too physical. You might get beat up, you might get banged up, you might not have as good a career there that you will somewhere else. Well, that's not the way the NFL GMs are looking at it, and that's not the way the NFL coaches are looking at it. They want to take kids that want to compete at the highest level, that want to go play in those big time matchups, and that's what the kids want. They want to go play in the biggest games and the biggest places, and that's what they aspire to do. So for a coach in maybe another conference to sell that, hey, it might be a little easier path to come over here and go this way, it just speaks volumes. You want kids to be able to see through that.
To be clear, we don't know if that's what UNC's pitch to Grimes has been, easier path here than it would be at Georgia. But I take Smart at his words that some programs are doing that. I'll also assume that Tony Grimes is an elite competitor in addition to everything else, and he probably desires to play the game at the highest level and play in those big games. That's why he's attracted to a place like Georgia or a place like Ohio State, Texas A&M, frankly, for that matter there as well. He wants to play in really big games. The point, though, of all this is, whether UNC did this or not, some programs will. And for recruiting battles for Georgia, they won't all be head-to-head versus Alabama with UGA trying to convince a recruit that Georgia plays the game at the highest level just like everybody else does, or in this case, an elite program like Alabama does. In some cases, it's going to be to convince a kid, don't go somewhere where it might be a little easier. Don't go somewhere where you picture yourself as a star right away, as a freshman playing from day one. Come here, go through the rigors of practice where you battle for playing time, where you emerge victorious there, then get a chance to play on a stage that a lot of programs cannot match. That's the pitch that Georgia's going to have to make to a lot of recruits battling against a lot of other programs going forward. The overall point of all this is, no matter what Grimes says today, it's probably not over. Georgia may get a chance to host its visit, get a chance to sell itself for what it brings to the table, and that, for UGA fans, could end up being a very good thing. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented today by Engineered Solutions of Georgia, and glad to have you with us. No matter how you get to us today, it's video on Facebook and YouTube, it's radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, pretty much any kind of podcast platform you can find. I'm always amazed at all the various platforms people listen to the show on. Pretty much whichever one you use, you're going to find Dog Nation Daily, and we appreciate you being with us today and being a part of everything that's going on. And it would not be possible without our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. They are experts when it comes to foundation issues, waterproofing issues. We had a lot of rain. It's been a rainy 2020, it would seem. So you may notice wet spots, dampness in places you haven't seen it before, and you know deep down that's something you got to do. You got to fix that. You got to work on that. You got to prevent that from being an issue. But the fact of the matter is, you know, there's only so much you may know about this, but my friends at ESOG, they know a lot about this kind of stuff. They have two full-time engineers on staff. When you see those cracks show up in your foundation, don't put that off getting seen about. My friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia can give you the advice you need about what really needs to be fixed right now, what's a big issue, what's something to think about. This is the structural integrity of your home, after all, and you want to trust it to really good folks. The other thing about doing business with ESOG is they're proud partners of UGA. That makes it fun to do business with. They're good friends of ours here on Dog Nation Daily, and the great news is very easy to get in touch with. The number could not be easy to remember. Simply dial. In fact, you see it if you're watching a video on the truck right there on your screen. Simply dial 678-ESOG now. That's 678-ESOG now. That'll get you in touch with my friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. All right, we have a very fun guest coming up in just a couple of minutes. We're going to talk to former Georgia wide receiver Sean Bailey, one of the stars and the heroes, one of the great games in my lifetime as a UGA fan, the 2005 SEC Championship win versus LSU. So we'll kind of reflect back on that with Sean, but I'm also curious to get some of his opinions about the current Georgia wide receivers. We will do a lot of that with him coming up in just a moment. Let me get to this before we get there, though. There is a gambling website that sent out some PR data yesterday. It's the name of the site, Sports Betting Dime. And what they put out is they've got some over-unders that you can bet on for average stadium attendance for the upcoming season. I want to show you the full top 10 here, and we'll focus in on UGA here for a moment. So Michigan's number one on the list with an over-under of just 38,850. That's only 35% of the 2019 average attendance for the Big House. Then it's Penn State at number two, about the same ratio. Ohio State at number three. A&M at number four. All of these are, you know, larger stadiums. And in A&M's case, there's already been some talk of about 50% attendance there. Then it's Alabama at 5, LSU at 6th, with the over-under of 43,340. That's 43% of 2019 attendance. Then you get to Texas at 7, Nebraska at 8, and then you get Georgia at number 9 on this list for over-under of average attendance. So the number you can bet on here is 42,700, which would be 46% of 2019 attendance. Now, I got to tell you, the fact that this number as the over-under number is set as high as it is, hey, it may not be all that predictive necessarily, because a lot of times these kind of obscure gambling on end up not being great harbingers of what actually happens in real life. You can see this when you like bet on coaching hires and things like that, for instance, but I still take it as some good news. And believe it or not, for average attendance for the full season, I might actually still say the over on that number is a better bet than not. Not for a huge wager or anything like that, but I'm still more optimistic than not that there will be more fans than not at the stadium, in the stadium by the time the the season's done. Now, I realize that's flying in the face of the just the, you know, the news that's been out there from within inside the world of sports and outside the world of sports. I get that, but I guess I'm just trying to keep a good thought and trying to keep the idea out there that the season that we've all, you know, come to view it as, the sport we've all come to know and love, may actually still reflect that in some form or fashion. So if you need a little bit of good news, there it is. Average attendance, about 40-something thousand. Some people maybe even think there'll be more than that. Keep your eye on that here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Later on, a UGA defensive back has shared a really fun memory that he has from this past season. It'll be good to go down memory lane with him on that. We'll do that in a moment. But as promised, the former Georgia wide receiver, a big star and an SEC championship win, and a great analyst looking at the guys currently on the roster. Let's talk to Sean Bailey right now. It is always a great pleasure for me when I get a chance to talk to former Georgia wide receiver Sean Bailey, partially because I've got great memories of him as a UGA player, and also partially because I think Sean's a really good, thoughtful, insightful guy when it comes to the guys who are playing his position at Georgia now. So with that in mind, we'll welcome in Sean Bailey here to Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia today. Sean, thanks for spending some time with us. Hope you're staying healthy and safe. Hope you're having a great summer, and we appreciate you being here on Dog Nation Daily here today.
Yeah, no, thank you. Summer's going great, and things are going well for me. So
let me go back down memory lane here for a moment, because as I said before you joined us, the 2005 SEC championship game for me is one of those special moments, because as you'll remember and recall, Georgia was a big underdog that day, and you know, LSU was the big favorite, and a lot of folks were expecting the Tigers to kind of come in there and have an easy go of it. You score a couple touchdowns. DJ Shockley has a big day at the quarterback spot for Georgia that day, and it really goes on to be one of the great wins of the Mark Richt era, and probably one of those games that when we're thinking about those really fun moments for being a UGA fan, maybe that 2005 SEC championship game doesn't come up as frequently as it should. When you think back on that game, a game that you were a real pivotal performer in, what are your own memories of that?
Yeah, no, that was a special memory, a special game for sure. It, like you said, we were, you know, huge underdogs, and we took that on. So we were relaxed, we were free that whole week of practice. There was no pressure. You know, the coaches were relaxed. We knew LSU was aggressive and on defense, and that was something that we were expecting to be able to exploit going into the game.
You know, as I said before, you were underdog in that game, but in a lot of the games that you would have played in that era in the early days of Mark Richt, Georgia would have been a big favorite and the team that was expected to win. Is the motivation different when you know, the media or the fans or whatever else, you know, turn on ESPN, what they're saying? Is the motivation different in a game in which maybe people aren't really giving you a chance? I think a lot of us assume that to be the case. This Georgia team now doesn't get a chance to feel that very much. But is the motivation different in that regard?
It is. And, you know, when you're in it, you want to be politically correct and you want to say, you know, say the right things and say, no, I'm, you know, just as motivated as normal, whether we're underdogs or we're not. You know, your motivation is the same. But I think in reality, if we're honest with ourselves, when you're, you know, underdogs, you have that natural chip on your shoulder. You want to go out there and you want to prove people wrong. So your focus is a little bit more lasered in. You know, you can play a lot freer, and you know that motivation is just a little bit higher. Again, you know, when you're in the middle of it, you know, coaches aren't going to say that or players aren't going to say that. But when you take a step outside of it and you go back and you look, I think the truth is that there is a difference, and you can feel it for sure.
Let me ask you one more thing on this topic, then I want to talk about the current team for a moment. Another reason why I remember the 2005 SEC championship game so fondly is because it was a big moment for DJ Shockley. And as you'll remember, you know, Shockley had waited his time at Georgia. At one point in time, many people thought he might transfer. Shockley himself has admitted that he certainly strongly considered that, and yet decided to stay at UGA and was ultimately rewarded for that. In this day and age we're in now, that's an uncommon decision. Guys want to play right away, and I can certainly understand why they would want to. What was your feeling and your thought watching DJ back then wait his turn, get a chance to thrive, and really kind of go down as one of the great single-season performances from a Georgia quarterback as a guy that was catching touchdowns from him? I'm sure you were glad that he stuck around to be your quarterback there in 2005, but What was it like, you know, kind of watching him kind of go through a lot of that?
Yeah, like you said, that today in today's game with today's kids, that won't happen. If it does, it'll be one in a million. But DJ, because of that, and other things, he owned the locker room. He had every single person's respect in that locker room. And it was one of those things where you wanted to rise up to the occasion for him, you know, to be as talented as he was, and to patiently sit there. And I know it's agonizing when you know you can compete at a high level, and you have a guy who, you know, in front of him, and David Green, who deserved to be in front of him at the time. But, you know, DJ could have gone to pretty much any other college and would have been a starter. So a guy that's willing to make that sacrifice in a team game like football, it really demands the respect of everybody else, and everybody else wants to rise to the occasion for him and make sure that he's able to have success in that you know, lone starting season. You know, make, you know, that one season, you know, as special as four seasons are for you know, most other quarterbacks. You know, that was our job as a support cast to him that year.
Let me talk to you about some of the current Georgia wide receivers, and it's Sean Bailey, the former UGA wide receiver, here with us on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. You know, Terrence Edwards, a guy that did great things at the Georgia wide receiver spot, has predicted that he thinks that George Pickens may eventually break some of his records and may kind of go down in history as one of the great guys to ever play the receiver position at Georgia. You know the position very well, too. When you see Pickens, what do you see from him? And I guess as you think about his sophomore season coming up, what would you still like to see more from him?
Yeah. I mean, when I see George, I see a prototypical receiver. To have the athletic ability that he has, the size that he is, and probably the biggest thing that stands out to me about him is that he truly loves football. He loves to compete. You know, I've had the pleasure to go watch, you know, several practices. And there's a lot of elite guys that are able to turn it on and turn it off. But when you have a guy that has it turned on all the time, like George does, practice, he loved to compete. He was extremely vocal, and this is as a freshman. So, you know, he's extremely vocal. He's in it. He's competing at every down. Not even when it's just in the pass game, when it's in the run game, and his job is to block and be aggressive. He's going, you know, 100 miles per hour. And you don't see that a lot at this position. It's a prima donna position. You got a lot of athletes that you know, like to catch balls, like to score touchdowns, but they don't like to get their hands dirty. And George, he will go get his hands dirty in a heartbeat, and he gets excited and is thrilled to do it. So that's probably the biggest thing that I like to see from his game is he loves to compete. He's in it in practice. And he's aggressive even when he's not getting the ball.
Boy, that's great to hear, Sean. Really, really well said. If memory serves, I mentioned your performance at the 2005 SEC Championship game. After that, in preparation for the Sugar Bowl, I believe you tore your ACL. And if I'm misremembering that, I apologize. But I believe that was true. Dominic Blaylock kind of also finds himself in a similar situation where he had a knee injury in the SEC Championship at the end of the season. He's trying to recover. I guess, I know that 20, you know, these years later, about 15 years later, the process of recovering an ACL is probably a little bit different now, but in terms of what the offseason's been like for him and how much we can expect to see from him, do you have an opinion on kind of, you know, how his recovery needs to go in terms of him being as good in his second year as we kind of saw him be at times during his first season?
Yeah, you're correct. I tore my ACL in that bowl prep right after that SEC championship game, so the timeline was very similar to Dom's. And to your point, in 10, 15 years, times have changed. Believe it or not, my 10-year-old tore his ACL in October.
Wow,
so I'm actually sitting right outside of his rehab facility right now.
Is that right?
And they're moving at a lot faster speed. The technology and the different things that they're doing, it's a lot quicker rehab process from getting from, not walking on it, to walking on it, running on it, cutting on it, and all that stuff. So I feel like with that advancement, I feel like Dom is going to get back to himself sooner than later. I think, within the season, he'll he'll be back to 100% for sure. Might, you know, be a couple games, you know, before he's really, really feeling it. But I, you know, I don't think it's going to be an 18 or 24 month thing before we see the Dom we saw last year. I think it'll be, you know, sooner than later.
That's great to hear. And let me do one more thing, and we'll let you get back to taking care of your son. And obviously prayers to him as he continues his knee recovery there. Georgia brings in a lot of freshman receivers. A lot of these guys look great on film. Jermaine Burton and Justin Robinson and Arian Smith, who's really fast. Marcus Roseme, who does a little bit of everything. But this is a tough league to be a great freshman receiver in. As a guy who's been through this, as a guy who's had success, you know, what would you tell these freshman receivers to get the most out of this first year on campus? Georgia needs some of these guys to be contributors. What's the best way for them to put themselves in line to be able to do that?
I mean, the first and the biggest thing is to control what you can control, and especially in this time with COVID-19. You know, there's no excuse not to be in that playbook and to have it memorized, to know what the blitz adjustments are, to know the ins and outs. You know, I tell all the receivers that I come into is to learn the playbook as if you were a quarterback, so you can know, you know, what the X, Y, and Z is doing, because you never know when your opportunity is going to come, and you might be practicing at X, but a Z receiver goes down, and if you were just learning your single position you were practicing at, you know, you might miss an opportunity. So take advantage of having these virtual meetings. Take advantage of getting in that playbook when you're able to get out there on the field. You know, don't just learn the one position that you're at. Learn them all. Learn as if you're a quarterback, and that's going to put you mentally in the game. Because, you know, when you go from high school to college, the biggest thing is the speed of the game. Everything changes. So if you're having to think and not just react, if you're like, oh, what do I have on this play, what am I doing, you're not able to go 100 miles per hour. Whereas if you take the mental aspect out of it, where you've learned everything and you know everything like the back of your hand, now you can get back to playing like you were playing in high school and just going out there and reacting and making plays. Because all these guys have the talent to do it. It's, you know, whether they're going to be mentally strong enough early in, and then also physically strong enough, you know, being in that weight room as well.
Sean, this has been a great discussion. I always love your insight on UGA football. As I said before, continued prayers for your son as he works on his own knee injury there, and hope we get a chance to speak to you here on our program again very soon.
Joining you guys anytime you need me, let me know.
That's good stuff there from Sean Bailey. We'll hold off on that just for a second. That's good stuff there from Sean Bailey, the former UGA wide receiver. Always fun to have him part of the program. Before we move on, I just want to mention one thing that Sean brought up. I thought this was a great description, and I think I've tried to say a version of this before, but I don't know that I've said it quite as succinctly and to the point that John did about George Pickens. What is the thing about Pickens that I've always liked? What is the thing about Pickens that I think gives him an edge that could really enable his success? And ultimately, in sports, it's not the athleticism, I think, that determines how great you end up being, because by the time you get to the highest possible level, everybody's an elite athlete. George Pickens was a five-star coming out of high school, but we can think of five stars who, you know, haven't always gone on to great careers. Some of them are just good. Some of them are a little less than that. The thing that always has been there for Pickens for me is a little bit of a fire that burns in him. And frankly, I think this is a rarity in life, whether it be in football or anything. You know, that hunger, you know, I love the way that Sean Bailey said this a moment ago. He says, I've seen him at practice, and even as a freshman, when, you know, a lot of guys would be overwhelmed by what they were experiencing. A lot of guys would be kind of trying to take it, you know, somewhat taken aback and trying to get used to everything. Sean Bailey says George Pickens loved football, and George Pickens was like in the thick of it, whether it be as a pass catching target, which is what receivers want to be, or a blocker for the running game when called upon being. Sean Bailey says, with my own eyes, I saw this from him in multiple practices, just being in the thick of the football, being in the thick of where it was all going. You know, not a prima donna standing on the sides, you know, not a guy just standing there waiting for, you know, a chance at glory, but a guy that, and I love this, he says, a guy willing to get his hands dirty, a guy willing to just get in there and be a football player like any other, just in the mix amongst the 22 guys there. That's all really fun stuff, and it's great to hear that description from a guy that would know. Because when you've played the game at the highest level, when you've had big performances in SEC championships and, you know, things along those lines, when you've had, you know, that go on, it does give you, I think, a different kind of perspective on the guys that follow in that path after you. So Sean Bailey's words carry some weight. He says, I saw at practice a guy who loved football and a guy who desired to be in the mix. And really, if you go back and compare that to some of the things that Pickens has said in his own right after the Sugar Bowl, when he talked about the growth that he had experienced over the course of his time at Georgia and the fact that he wanted to fight for everything that he got. He didn't want it to be easy. He wanted to have to earn it. I think that's a really fun way to hear that in Pickens' own words and to have what Pickens himself has said in the past validated by what a former Georgia wide receiver says there. That was definitely worth my time here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia Today.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, I want to move on and talk about the rest of the SEC for a moment. In particular, I want to talk about a piece that's up at the Sporting News. Before that, though, let me tell you about my friends at the Technical College System of Georgia. And like the one thing that really I love about TCSG, the Technical College System of Georgia, it's practical learning. It's stuff that helps you just be better at life. And in some cases, this is career-oriented. And in some cases, it's business-oriented, how to, be a part of a real successful life formula. In other cases, things like driver's education, because right now the Technical College System of Georgia have moved their driver's education courses online. That means you can get live classroom instruction. It's entirely online. It's going to prepare you for the in-person driving portion of the exam. So you can check all of this out. The website to go to is tcsg.edu/driversed. Once again, that's tcsg.edu/driversed. You can find the closest college to you. You can get registered, and you can really, put yourself on a path, or if this is your child you're thinking of here, put them on a path towards being behind the wheel and feeling good about, what they're doing behind the wheel of a car or a truck, whatever it is they're going to be driving. Start that with our friends at the Technical College System of Georgia. Once again, the website, tcsg.edu/driversed. And you can take some driver's ed courses and get ready to pass that exam and be out there driving here really soon. So good stuff all the way around. All right. So the Sporting News did something kind of interesting. They ranked the top teams of the decade. Now, this is not like individual teams, it's just sort of program success over the course of the last 10 years. And I think there's a couple things that we can learn from this. And I want to start with at the top here, where it's probably not a surprise that Alabama was the top team of the decade. Won a national championship in 2011, won a national championship in 2012, came back and won it again in 2017, 2015. A lot of national championships for Alabama over the course of these years, and that's true. However, if we were to say Alabama's the team of the decade, look at the team just behind them at Clemson at number two. Is it fair to say that over the course of the last 5 years, the team of the half decade has probably been Clemson? I mean, is that fair to say? Bama won the championship in 2015, but Clemson came back and won it in 2016. Bama won in 2017. Clemson came back and won it in 2018. Clemson and Dabo Swinney have won two of the last three. And the reason why I bring that up is that last half decade, the last 5 years, feels a good bit different to me than the 10 years overall that kind of comprises a decade. It feels like we could be on the precipice of a change in college football, where whether it be best team of the decade stuff, which Sporting News ranks here, or best coach in the sport stuff, which CBS and pretty much everybody's had their turn with, it feels like Alabama could be on the verge of being moved off that. Now, Alabama, to its credit, is doing everything it can to keep that from happening. They're still recruiting at a high level. They're still the favorite in the SEC this year. They'll be a point spread favorite when Georgia goes to Tuscaloosa in September. If there's a rematch, even on a neutral field in December, Alabama, in all likelihood, unless there's just a million injuries, in all likelihood, Alabama will still be a point spread favorite over Georgia if these teams rematch there in December. So Alabama's not going quietly into that night. But it does feel like there's a little bit of a potential changing of the guard, and Clemson's kind of felt like that team. However, there's also a competition to be the program that nudges Alabama out the door, whether it be Clemson again in the college football playoff, or what LSU did to Alabama last season when beating them up on the field, running all over them offensively. Then after the game, Ed Orgeron, I'll use air quotes here, accidentally captured on video, really kind of sticking it to Alabama in terms of this being the start of what Orgeron, I think, would assume is a redefining of both these programs going forward. And the reason why I mention this is because Georgia also wants to be a part of this. If Alabama really is about to be nudged off its perch, Georgia doesn't want it to be Clemson that does the final nudge. And it certainly doesn't want to be LSU that builds itself up as a way of pushing Alabama down. Georgia still wants to be the team that gets credit for ending the Alabama dynasty, and we will see how that plays out going forward. A couple other things that I wanted to mention about this. By the way, speaking of Georgia, Georgia's ninth on this list. So I mentioned Alabama, Clemson, then it's Ohio State at 3, Oklahoma at 4, LSU at 5, Florida State, Oregon, Wisconsin, which we'll get to in a moment, and Georgia at number 9 ahead of Auburn at 10. Now, what's interesting about this is, I guess you would have to say, last 10 years for Auburn includes every year. Am I doing this right? Actually, it would include the national championship of 2010, then every year through 2019. And Auburn also played for national championship there in 2013. But I think a lot of Auburn fans assume that because Auburn won a BCS championship in 2010, that makes them a better program than Georgia, regardless of what happens after the fact. But isn't it kind of funny? We mentioned this a little bit yesterday in light of the news that Cam Newton, the star of that 2010 Auburn team, has signed with the New England Patriots. Boy, there hasn't been a lot going on for Auburn since then, has there? I mean, has any team gotten less out of a national championship than Auburn got in 2010? Auburn won a national championship to start the last decade and yet still only finished, at least if you take the Sporting News and our buddy Bill Bender at his word, only finished as the 10th best team of the decade. I think it's ridiculous that Wisconsin's rated ahead of Georgia for the last 10 years. Wisconsin at 8, Georgia at 9. I guess the Badgers do win at the very beginning of the decade. I think they win 2 Big Ten titles, may have shared a third. But really, you're talking about some very meager records in some of those years for Brett Bielema, my coach, in order to do that. I can't think of one consequential game that Wisconsin's played in the last 10 years. This is probably a homer call. But nonetheless, I feel pretty confident saying it's been a more meaningful, impactful 10 years for Georgia than it's been for Wisconsin, even if a lot of the significance for Georgia has come in the last few years. And then finally this, and this is not a homer take at all. It's probably the exact opposite. If you look on here, you may be a little bit surprised to see Florida State at number 6 on this list. When we make a list of the greatest single-season teams of all time, and I've got nothing to gain from saying this. Like I said, this is the exact opposite of a homer pick because this is not Georgia, this is not the SEC, but it's just my opinion. When we make a list of the great single-season teams of all time, or certainly the great single-season teams within the last few decades, not just the last decade, last couple of decades, I think 2013 Florida State ought to get more consideration there. It's almost a team lost to time because after that, the Seminoles were not very good, have not been very good. Jimbo Fisher's not there anymore. Florida State has seemingly relinquished its commitment to football in a lot of ways, although I guess they're trying to, you know, reestablish that under Mike Norvell now. So because of the fact that really nothing happens post-Jameis Winston for Florida State, that it's easy to forget how good they were way back in 2013. So do with that what you will. Florida State may be surprisingly high on this list for some, but man, easy to forget how good 2013 Florida State was. And they did go back and make the playoff again in 2014, so I guess you got to give them a little bit of credit for that. And we'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia, let me turn my attention fully back to UGA here for a moment, because I thought that there was something interesting that Devod Wilson shared on Twitter recently. I'm not on TikTok. I'm sure many of you are probably not surprised to hear that. But I guess UGA did a little TikTok thing with Wilson, looking back on his big memory from the 2019 season. No surprise, it was the interception that he gathered in the game against Notre Dame, one of the wild moments for George in the 2019 season, really in terms of an atmosphere standpoint, unrivaled, I think, in the history of games being played between the hedges. Wilson was a big part of the victory and kind of in a humorous fashion shared some memories of that on TikTok. Here is Devod Wilson.
Hey, TikTok. Tickety top, top, top. What's good, man? My name is Devod Wilson. I'm number one, and I play defensive back. Favorite play from last season had to be the Notre Dame versus Georgia game, or the interception, because it was my most impactful play of the year. I knew it was a crunch moment. I couldn't hear nothing but, like, the crowd and the ears. So, I mean, it wasn't really a lot mental. It was just man-to-man coverage. Thanks for tuning in, guys. Stay safe. Bye, dogs.
Of course, the charming tones of Brooke Whitmire, the UGA personal address, public address announcer, also sneaks in there a little bit. A lot of you remember the Wilson interception. It was one of those things where it was a great play, and yet it almost seemed like he was going to fumble the football. Like the ball's bouncing everywhere. It's just like that you know, people have often said that, you know, football's a funny game because it's a funny shaped ball that takes funny bounces. There's probably no better example of that than the Wilson interception that he gathered there against Notre Dame, but he's right to call it a great play. I bring up the Wilson audio here for a couple of reasons. First of all, you should check out his own Twitter feed. You can actually see the video of the interception. We technically can't show that here on our program, but you can go see that for him on his Twitter feed. Couple things. First of all, I'm kind of fascinated by TikTok right now and all these, I guess, new social media platforms that kind of pop up. I think it's a tough job. We probably don't give this enough credit. If you're a UGA or really even media companies, which I'm certainly a lot more interested in, it's kind of trying to decide like which social mediums are you going to get involved with? Which ones are you not going to? You know, this is sort of outside the boundaries of what we do on the show. But I mean, like, I think India has banned TikTok. There have been all kinds of, you know, things kind of pop up recently about, you know, what some iPhone users have discovered that TikTok was doing to their phone. That's probably, as I said before, a different topic for a different kind of show. But in terms of which of these social mediums do you get heavily involved with, which are going to become a thing and which are going to kind of go by the wayside over time, that's not an easy decision to make. But George is obviously trying to be as aggressive in social media as it possibly can. More to the typical, I guess, content of this show, though, is Devon Wilson himself. I think that when you think about Wilson, it's very important to remember that prior to his injury in 2018 during spring practice, this was a guy who had gotten off to a great start with Georgia practices. You know, he had that first season kind of taken away from him a little bit by injury. We saw some of him at the end of that year in the Sugar Bowl. And, you know, he's been active on social media during the coronavirus lockdown. He's even talked about the possibility of winning the Thorpe Award, things like that. So he's obviously competent himself. I guess the point here, though, is don't forget about Devon. And we said this off the top of the program in terms of Tony Grimes making his announcement. Right now, the Georgia secondary seems about as deep as any position group could seem, whether it be established starters like Eric Stokes, what I think Tyson Campbell is, which is a top-flight cornerback in his own right, guys on the rise like Tyreek Stevenson, DJ Daniel, who certainly developed during the Campbell injury. It's easy to think about a lot of these kinds of guys. But Devon Wilson's always brought something kind of interesting to the table. He's got a little extra beef to him. He's probably 195 pounds or so. That's a good star position type guy. I think there's a chance we may still hear some from Devon Wilson before it's all said and done there as well. Gator Hater Updater, 1,340 days. We'll see you tomorrow, Dog Nation Daily, presented by ESOG.